So, listeners, this week we've travelled 87 kilometres southwest of Brisbane to a beautiful spot in the Scenic Rim, Scenic Rim Adventure Park. It's run by Brian and Wendy Harris, and you'll see during the interview they shed a lot of light on where they came from, originally from Sydney, to how to have probably one of the best four-wheel drive parks here in southeast Queensland. So, like they say, here we go. We'll get into the chat and see what Wendy and Brian have got to say. G'day, guys. Lethal here from the RV Tour. Welcome to episode two, and one that I'm pretty excited about because I've got a couple, Wendy and Brian, who run the Scenic Rim Adventure Park out at Rathdowney. But not only are they the hosts and so forth of the park, but they've become quite friends to myself and my wife, Marianne. So, guys, welcome to the RV Tour.
Oh, thank you for having a chat with us.
And no problems at all. So I thought we'd start by maybe going back a little bit, you know, where you come from and you know, sort of that history, how you got to the stage of, you know, settling down here in the Scenic Rim and you know, obviously I think you're from Sydney originally. So, yeah, just give us a little bit of background.
London, actually.
London. London. Well, you're a long way from home.
That's right. No, we lived in Eleanora Heights. I grew up from the age of 12 on Narrabeen Lake. So we were used to sort of a casual lifestyle. As our children grew older, Brian had his own business. I used to be a guide leader for 24 years. He was a soccer coach. And we also got into four-wheel driving back with the Suzuki New South Wales group.
Was it a Suzuki that you had, or was it just you had a four-wheel drive?
No, we bought the XL7, which unfortunately they don't make anymore. Yep. It was brilliant. We would go on the trips, and when we first went, it was real brand new to the market.
Nobody, didn't want to scratch it?
Nobody knew the capabilities of the car. So when we went with the club, they used to always make sure we were either behind one of the Nissans or the Toyotas. And I think at the end of about 5 years, I think the club members, there was about 10 or 15 of the XL7s, because a lot of them, after doing a couple of long trips, they got tired of having dust and things in their little Sierras. I'll just leave you chatting with Brian a minute. I think I've just had someone call in.
There we go. We've got a guest coming in. So I'll just pause.
Driving
with the four drives and so forth down in Sydney.
Yeah, so that was our first experience with four-wheel drive. And we, you know, we found out that you need a four-wheel drive to see that streets and roads that you just can't see without access to four-wheel drive.
Yep.
So Brian was interested in that. As I say, we did our big trip around Australia, took our daughter out of grade five, and 34,000 kilometres or something in 14 weeks.
So what did you have then?
We had a Winnebago motorhome.
A Winnebago motorhome, there you go.
The first one we had was the Leisure Seeker, and then after that trip, we upgraded to one where I didn't have to sort of climb down the stairs to go to the oven, that sort of thing. And the second one was called, I can't remember.
It was the Winnebago Alpine.
The Alpine.
Oh, yeah.
So
035. Mm. Yep.
And that was absolutely beautiful. And we always had planned to keep that one and do some more travelling. But we had one grandchild back then who was in Queensland. Our son had married a girl from Queensland. We had a business up here. Our eldest daughter, she had met a new partner and she moved to Queensland. Our middle daughter had gone to Melbourne, and so we had Alicia, our youngest, was doing year 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided she was going to do distance education, and Brian sold his share of the business. He owned a company called Premier Displays. They used to do the Australian Geographic stores when they had the platypus
over
the door handle.
Yep.
And he did the Healthy Life stores and the Elite Fitness stores. So we sold our home.
So a shop fitting type business.
Shop fitting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
So we sold our home that we had lived in for over 30-odd years in Elnora Heights, and we ended up buying a place at Park Ridge. And we moved up, and our plan was to get a house, put everything in the house in storage, and then get in the car and go, because we had the Alpine with the car trailer,
yep,
with the XL7 and all our camping gear. And then the boys rang Brian. They had 6 shots on the go in Queensland, and nobody wanted to speak to the new owners. So they asked Brian if he could work part-time and look after the Queensland stores for them till they were finished. So we didn't go on our trip. We put our daughter into high school at Park Ridge, and Brian worked for about 18 months. And on a trip we had back in Sydney, he decided to have 3 sneezes 2 o'clock in the morning, turned his head at the wrong time and split the inner lining of his main artery and ended up with a massive stroke.
Oh.
So a month intensive care, Royal North Shore, then they flew him to QE2. He had 3 months in QE2, then a further 3 months, 3 days, 3 hours therapy. Couldn't drive a car.
Yep. So how's that for you, Brian? That's a life-changing experience to go from a man that's got everything to all of a sudden you can't even drive, you can't do anything.
It's a life-changing experience for all the people you're associated with too.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, being right out there, wanting to be the coach for a state youth league soccer team, and my coaching was based on showing the boys how I want them to practice certain skills.
Yep.
I had those skills. Changed the situation where I had to try to communicate that by voice,
yep,
and by choosing certain players to demonstrate that they had those skills,
yep,
to do them for as a demonstration.
Yep.
And so that became frustrating in itself, and the fact that I couldn't walk where I wanted to, and that was the whole thing with going around Australia. I'm now in a situation where I'm back to a point where I can at least do a reasonable day's hike, like 4 to 5 k's if I had to.
Yep.
And
so how long ago was the stroke?
The stroke was the 2nd of October 2007.
And we were 57 self-funded retirees.
Yeah.
And life changed totally. So
how was that for you, Wendy?
Well, as I said, life changed totally. I spent most of the time in hospital with Brian, and that's where we met three couples. And we eventually did go and do a trip around Australia with one of them. And as I said, I had the motorhome and I had to go and get my licence. And the other lady had sold a caravan, bought a motorhome. So, we were able to still do some of that sort of thing. But the biggest problem or the biggest thing of my thing was trying to get to find Brian a new lifestyle.
Yeah, sure.
And 2009, our son's business folded with the recession. He was an electrician. Recession is the right word, I'm thinking. And Cityview around at Bromelton was up for sale.
Yep. So Cityview being?
A four-wheel drive park.
Oh, okay. So a four-wheel drive. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
He went and had a look at it. To get to it, it was only a small 300-acre lot. But to get to it, you had to go through the farmer's property. It was landlocked.
Yep.
And Brendan was talking to the farmer. He said he had 3 blocks at the back of his property he wanted to get rid of. So Brendan agreed. He took it on with a lease for 3 years. So 1 year to see if he could get a business up and running, and then a further 2 years to purchase.
Yep.
Brian and I used to go down because I loved camping. I was a guide leader for 24 years. And when we went down onto the property, we got an old Jeep and we had a steering arm put on the Jeep, which meant Brian could drive on the land. He couldn't drive on the roads, but it gave him a bit of self-esteem, self-worth.
Yep.
So we used to go down every weekend.
Which I probably rolled.
You probably rolled.
I think since
you're talking about that, the steering, the controller?
No, he's rolled the car. He's rolled two cars and hit a tree with another one. And this was way back, early stroke time. This was only a couple of years.
Was it a soft roll, or was it with one, or was it one to write home about? So
very gentle.
Very gentle, just over.
Just sort of straddled around, sort of going like that.
Yep. Yeah, just tipped over. Yep.
I was speaking to our then son-in-law, who Brian was teaching how to four-wheel drive, and I said to him,
"So you've got a man that's rolled two cars around into trees now teaching people how to drive four-wheel drive."
This was prior to the second and third car. This is the first one he had. But when I was speaking to our son-in-law, he says, "I said, what happened?" He said, "Well, Mum," he said to me, "you know, now when you're in this situation, you don't do, you know, you do this, you don't do this." He said, and then he went and did what he told him not to do. But as I said, it was in the first couple of years after Brian's stroke. And when you have a massive stroke like he had, the whole back quarter of his brain had gone. It takes a long time for the brain to readjust itself and find pathways and whatever. So, but yeah, so we started off, we developed that land, which is now called Swan Gully, and had it all organised. And a couple of years down the track, we had been waiting for council to approve that site. Farmer put his price up ridiculously. I went on the internet to have a pricing, and we found this place. And this is the old Mirvanbeer property that did high school wilderness camps for 40 years.
Okay. So what was it? What was it called? Mirvanbeer,
which meant flying with eagles.
Oh, okay. Aboriginal term.
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they had, I believe, according to records, they had something like 4,000 students go through their program in 2011. But they had moved the business out to Maroon Dam, and they're now called Kokoda.
Okay.
So,
Kokoda.
Yeah, so this property was up for sale. We went along, had a very positive meeting with council staff, put an offer in, and it was all very quick. Within 6 weeks, we had left Bromelton and moved over here. And, of course, unfortunately, because of a lot of social media and things that people put up on social media, people that don't drive a four-wheel drive or are not into the four-wheel drive scene just look at it as a pack of vandalism and hooligans. And
towards the bush itself?
To the environment itself. I mean, we see it today, even now, out on Friars, Fraser and Morton, you see people post up where some unfortunate person hasn't read the tide correctly and their car's been swamped and things like that.
Yeah.
But we did have the neighbours that were concerned. And unfortunately it did lead us to a very lengthy legal challenge, which we won.
Yep.
So Scenic Rim Adventure Park here at Tamarukan Creek is secured.
Yep.
We won the case.
That's got to be a big weight off your shoulders. Like, you went through a lot of time, effort, financial stress.
Huge financial. If people had said to us originally, you know, if you purchase this land to get it all to where you want it, it's going to cost, you know, close on $1 million.
Yeah.
It's like, we would have looked at each other, although we were self-funded retirees, and said, well, we haven't got that sort of money.
Yeah.
Would never have gone. But, you know, in hindsight, things could have been done a lot different on both sides, on council side and our side, on neighbours' sides as well, if neighbours had taken the time to come and speak to us with their concerns rather than, you know, just putting in formal complaints and things. But these days people are not sure.
Yeah.
How people are going to react to things. But it is positive. We get great feedback from here. And, of course, when we bought this place, Brian and I bought the land in our name, and I took over directorship of the business because our son had been headhunted and he was off doing another business. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, so life was different. We haven't done any further travelling in the motorhomes, and unfortunately we have to sell our motorhome. But it is a fantastic way of life.
Yeah.
If you're travelling, if you're doing the big trip around Australia, as I was saying when we did our trip, we'd pull in either at a free camp. We did a lot of free camping.
Yep.
And I felt very confident, even with Brian having a stroke, in doing that, because if ever someone had pulled up beside us and things were a little bit unsure about who's there or what's happening, I could just slip down under the bed and get in the driver's seat and we could drive off.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in a caravan,
you have to get outside.
So for continual travel, the motorhomes are brilliant.
Yep.
We would pull up and set up what we wanted to set up for the night, eating dinner, wind the aerial up and we're watching TV, or charging up the batteries for the cameras and things that we had done. And then in the morning we'd get up and it was almost like a plane cockpit checklist.
Yep.
An aerial downstairs, up, latches on, all these little things you find.
Yep.
And we get up, have breakfast, go through the cockpit, and we'd drive off. And we'd still hear these people in the caravans that are still packing up, that have been going before we even got out of bed, and they were still going after we left.
Yep.
So I highly recommend motorhomes.
Yep.
If you're doing those long travels.
Yep.
And although we, back in the 80s, late 80s, we did the trip around Australia in 14 weeks, places we were driving
around the country in 14 weeks.
Yes.
That's a fairly quick trip.
Yes. We bypassed going north. We went to
Kent. Seriously.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, that was prior to Brian's stroke. He was the driver in those days. But we went Gympie.
So was it a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, or what did you have?
No, that was the Alpine.
Yeah, Susan would do 5.1 kilometres to the litre.
Yep.
And it was the big 170, 250 motorhome.
Yep.
Big engine that would do.
And going down the west coast.
100 miles an hour.
Yep.
Nice.
Going down the west coast, if you had the tailwind behind you, you'd have to be putting your foot on the brake to get to the 100.
Yeah.
If you had the tail in front of you, that was a little different story.
Yeah, it's pushing into
but
the wind.
When you're driving down the west coast, it's basically back then, you know, you had your towns and then you had almost 500 kilometres before the next town.
And nothing in between.
Yeah. But the driving was so comfortable. And you're also being in the first one was the Mazda, the second one was the Isuzu. But we were sitting up high, totally different to a lot of motorhomes now that were in those lower models. But
there's a few platforms now going back onto trucks and so forth, you know, Vecos and so forth. So,
No, the truck was brilliant. And honestly, both of the vehicles were so easy to drive.
Yeah.
I really could turn the Isuzu in a smaller circle than I can turn my Nissan four-wheel drive in a circle. But getting back to the park here, when we first bought it, there were only one track up and down on both sides and one across the centre. So we really didn't have any true understanding of what the property offered.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved in on the 13th of June 2012. And I had a bulldozer lined up, no, sorry, an excavator lined up to come in the day after, and a plumber to come in as well, because we knew that there was plumbing issues that needed to be addressed. And after working with the excavator, trying to widen the track to get up to the eastern side, 5 days in, you know, Jim said to me, "We're not getting very far, are we?" And I said, "No, we're not." And he says, I think we'd go faster if I had bulldozer working with me. And I said, "Well, do you know someone?" So he rang up one of the local guy, who turned out he used to build most of the tracks anyhow on the park, and Ernie Hargrave. And he rings Ernie and he says, "Oh, are you busy?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, I'm not too. What do you want?" And he said, "Oh, can you give me a few days at Tamarukan?" And so Ernie turned up. 1 month later.
A couple of days into a month. Yeah.
It took us a month to get the main. So you just can't have a single track going up onto a mountain coming down.
No.
Down for safety if you're looking at four-wheel drive. And mind you, in those days, we were still looking at the hardcore comp cars.
Yeah.
So, we did a lot of that. And, of course, as we were pulling, the property was totally infested with lantana, wild tobacco, cockspur, the weeds. Every weed you can name, we've got it. And every time we came to an area that was a nice level ground, we said, right, that can be campsite. And, of course, after being a guide leader, there is nothing worse than going to camping and having to cross tent pegs with strangers.
Yep.
So we've made this place slightly different. You've got 30 to 50 metres between each of the camping areas.
Yep.
We do have a couple of campsites that are accessible for motorhomes. The campsite 14 areas, there's a couple there that we've had motorhomes in there, and, of course, the campsite 14 area have got beautiful views.
So that's on the plateau below 13?
On the plateau below 13.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to take a big motorhome up to 13, that hill.
Yeah, no.
But 14 cuts along, so that works out well. And the other one is we take them through the emergency exit down along the flat, caravans and motorhomes, and we take them into the what we call the opposite lock area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I suppose, going on, looking at the emergency exit, that's a 3-acre lot. So the opposite lock camping area is probably about a 12-acre level area divided into 8 different zones for camping.
Yep.
But we're very much back to basic bush camping here, so we ask people to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And
I think most people these days, with the costs have come down a lot for your self-sufficient, with your power, with solar, with your toiletries, water, all that sort of stuff. You used to have a generator. You don't need generators anymore. Barbecues with cooking and so forth. Mm. It's cheap as with all these, the BCFs and all the other companies out there now. So you can set yourself up pretty well. Mm. So,
yeah, and the one thing that we have found is the wildlife on this property. We had actually 3 environmental reports done on the property. Council did one and we had 2 done. Totally independent, and we've got about 5-6 listed endangered flora and fauna. We have quite a good koala population. People do see the koalas, and they seem to be healthy without the eye problem.
Yep.
We do have dingoes. We have seen dingoes ourselves. Mm-hmm. Our side of the street has the dingoes. On the other side of the street, they've got the wild dogs.
Yep.
But we've only ever had, in the 11 years we've been here, I've only had 1 camper ever say they saw the dogs.
Yep.
We've got peacocks, we have eagles.
Kangaroos. We stayed up on 13 last night and we actually had 3 kangaroos come and pay us a visit, or wallabies I think they call them. So they've got the red mask or red, they've got like a red collar on them. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we normally, prior to the cyclone and the drought that we had, we didn't have the kangaroos at this end of the street.
Yeah.
The kangaroos were always at the front properties, and we had the paddy melons, the potoroos, and the pretty face wallabies. But I have noticed a couple of big roos on the property, so they seem to be coming in, whether or not it's because of the wet that we've had this year. The ground, certain areas are really, really soggy. So whether or not they've come to get to dry land, I don't know. But we have them. We have echidnas that are digging to China and bandicoots. And at our house, we never leave any doors open. Boxing Day, actually, our children had all gone home after Christmas and I could hear this scuffle, and I went out on the back porch, and I had this 3-foot goanna trying to open the flyway door.
Yes.
The wildlife, we have lots of wildlife here. Yeah. And it's surprising the amount of people that come from Brisbane and the Gold Coast. And, you know, it's certain times, if we actually see snakes around on the property, I usually let the clients know that we've seen them because it means they're active. And on a few times we've had people say, well, you've got snakes. And it's like you're in the bush because we've got snakes.
Yeah.
So.
It's certainly, you know, this morning sitting there sun up having a coffee, it's certainly a bird watcher's paradise as well. It's just tremendous, you know.
And we get these tiny, tiny little finches.
Yeah.
And the colours that we get are terrific. The environmental side of it for bird watching, as you say, wildlife spotting, we have had the wildlife people out here with cameras. And they've been looking just recently for the giant sugar glider.
Okay, yeah.
And they were going to bring a dog just before Christmas. They've got apparently a dog trained to find the sugar glider. But she rang me and said, we can't make it, she said, because we don't have a management plan for the welfare of the dogs. So they had to go back and write up a management plan for the welfare for the dogs before they could bring the dog out.
Sounds interesting. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, but...
But the sugar gliders, so they're nocturnal?
Yeah. 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 And, look, we've got sugar glider country.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of being here to spot them.
Yeah, yeah.
They've had some cameras up there, as I say. We did have a tabby cat they found, which is a shame. I wish it should be law, if you've got cats and dogs and unless you're a registered breeder, you should have to have it de-sexed.
Yeah.
Because of the damage that that one cat can do to the native wildlife, which could be horrific. We had a European fox and we had a red-tailed fox was seen at night. As I say, the wildlife is great. But our biggest, I would like to increase the wildlife awareness and things, but it's like everything. It comes back to manpower.
Correct. Which
we're very short on.
Yeah.
And finances.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's taken 10 years to get the business back to what it was in 2011.
Yeah.
When we left Bromelton. Yeah, as you say, been a long time, but every morning I get up and I look out here and see the birds and the wallabies and the sanctuary. That's what keeps me going. As I said,
it certainly is a slice of heaven. You know, I've referred to it a few times as our little slice of heaven. It's somewhere that you can get away and you know, once that sun goes down at night, you know, it's just such a peaceful sitting back, watching the stars and you know, our grandson sits there and counts the satellites at night he saw his first shooting stars out here. And, you know, it's just tremendous. So what's the main attraction, or what's the thing that gets the people to come here?
Well, with us it's word of mouth.
Yep.
Because of the tight restrictions of numbers that we have, we're permitted to use Tamarican Creek Road a day, which it's an ongoing discussion, has been with council and the planners as the planners change in council. But we get called, what do you spend a couple of $1,000 doing a big advertising campaign? That family that just pulled up, they only live at Cedar Creek and they didn't even know we existed.
Yep.
And we've been here for 11 years.
Yep.
But do I do that or do we do that? And then on the phone, people ring up, oh, I'd like to book. Sorry, I'm booked, I'm booked, I'm booked.
Yep.
Now, when you ring a place back two or three times and you find that they're booked, you can't get in, you give up.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a bit of a catch-22. But, I mean, anywhere if people can get their motorhomes out, not just a scenic rim here, but you've got Big Riggan, Flanagan's, Diamonds, Mount Barney. That's just in our small area of the scenic rim. It's almost like every weekend there's a holiday. There's a market on somewhere or a food festival or a grape, I believe. I can't remember which one it is, but at the end of the month you can go to this place and pick the grapes and or help them pick the grapes out in Senigrin. And I must admit, since we've moved here, we've made some really nice friends, neighbours. The people at the Bowls Club have been absolutely a lifesaver.
And that's where you're a champion now. Right? Brian's got a medal and he's now a pairs champion. So I was having a chat to him before we started this and you know, Brian's quite chuffed that it's the first award that he's actually won since he's had the stroke. So it's great to see him back on the podium as such. So, yeah, well done.
Mm. Yeah, so, you know, with the locals, the ladies, as I say, and the gentlemen, I used to just drive Brian up in the morning before he got his licence, because it was about 6 years before he got his licence back. And I would drop him off at Bowls, come back and whatever, and then he'd ring and say, we're finished, we're on our way home, and then people would drop him at the corner. So I used to drive out, pick him up on the corner. And it was funny, one of the ladies said to me, I noticed a lot of food that we put out, because they supply lunch. She said, a lot of food we put out, Brian doesn't seem to eat very much. And I said, what are you putting out? I said, if it's something he's got a carb, he's not eating it because he can't cut up his food.
Mm.
And she said, oh, I wondered about that. And I didn't know whether to ask him, did he want some help or not. I said, no, just cut his food up for him. That's fine.
And make him eat his groom.
Yeah, I did say make him eat his greens.
Yeah, good. Yeah, you got his greens.
Yeah, they're the sort of things, you know, that are really good. And, you know, we only had a situation the other day, you know, this country lifestyle. Our son-in-law had an accident, fell off a roof. Brian had had an operation. He's paralysed on the left. He'd had an operation on his Dupuytren on his right. He had a splint. And my daughter rang. I had to go and be there with her, pick her up and take her to the hospital and things. So I just said, Brian, you're going to have to fend for yourself. So I'm in the car heading off to pick up the daughter. And then I thought, oh, hang on, Brian. So I rang one of the local friends that we've got that we've met at Carralbin and just said, oh, look, can you go around to my house and get something out of the fridge and feed Brian for me? Because Brian's got two splints on his hands. He can't,
can't feed do it. Yep.
Now, he's able to use his thumb, but his thumb and his finger, so he can eat all the Christmas leftovers.
I can eat this.
Yeah, he's learning to eat the cream cakes and the buns. But that's the sort of thing, you know, and you know, we had that neighbourhood friendship in Sydney.
Yeah.
But I must admit, you know, when we moved up for those first years that we were at Park Ridge, we were probably there a good 10 years, I knew my neighbour one side and pretty much that was it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, country people seem to have a different attitude.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, in the four-wheel drive scene, we've had people come back and say, oh, yeah, so-and-so mates and help me out, and people help them out when they're driving. And yeah, so it's a lovely lifestyle to live where, you know, obviously we would like to have some more income, which would allow us to employ more to help.
Yep.
We did have one young lady put a post up on one of the things. This place could be absolutely beautiful if they did some maintenance.
yeah. But, you know, that's probably it's probably one of the things about the place is it's natural. You know,
it's very rustic.
It's very rustic. It's very natural. You're driving, you know, if you want to go and drive your four-wheel drive up a, you know, Tambourine Mountain or something like that to get that experience, that's what you're going to get. But out here, it's what four-wheel driving is all about, you know. And it's the type of park that you don't have to be, you know, roofie or, you know, one of the boys that knows how to four-wheel drive. You can learn. And, you know, you've got the great thing now with the driving academy. So you've got the boys teaching people how to drive a four-wheel drive. And they can learn the basics, the sort of things, but, you know.
That was something we started a few years back. We got to know a driver, a South Australian driving company, when it was a really big thing that if you worked in the mines or if the SES or the bushfire service, everyone had to have a qualified driving thing. off-road driving test. So they used to actually come here and take the people and do their courses. So that's how I got to know one of the local trainers. And so we decided that we would put them on offer and run them, and we had to pay for the qualified instructor to do it. More as a work health and safety thing, mm-hmm. because believe it or not, we have had the occasion person that has come in, signed in, gone back to their car, and then come back and said, can you show me how to put this car into four-wheel drive load? And it's like, stick to the green tracks. Just stick to the green tracks. And, yeah. But you've got to also realise after purchasing this property, because we couldn't get the unregistered cars approved, we had to totally change the business. So we've made a lot of the tracks so that they are drivable for stock standard vehicles.
Yep.
But we still do have those difficult ones.
Yep. But predominantly it's aimed at family four-wheel drives.
Yep.
And families, because people don't want to break their car.
No. Oh, look, there is people that do want to break the car and they do go insane, but, you know, again, this isn't the place for that.
We're trying to make sure it's not that.
Yes, correct.
Been there and done that.
Yeah,
it's not fun.
And this is the type of place that you can bring your young family. The kids can have a bit of a fun run around. There's, you know, there's things to look at, things to see. There's the wildlife. But, you know, Dad and Mum can both have a bit of fun playing in a four-wheel drive, you know, so.
Well, we quite often get families that have got three generations that come in. And, but as I say, with, you know, I know you're involved with the motorhome. As I say, we don't advertise the motorhomes because a lot of people don't like the idea of having to drive along a dirt road with them.
Yeah. But, you know, the RV2 is all about, you know, caravan and camper trailer and four-wheel drive and all that sort of stuff as well. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about destinations, and I think this is probably one of the best destinations within an hour and a half, 2 hours of Brisbane and the Gold Coast, and that people can come and literally just forget about the world for a little while. You know, there's a lot of fast-paced stuff happens out on the highway.
Yeah.
Once you come out here, it's all gone.
Well, we had a few years back, we had just a four-wheel drive guy that comes in, and he actually does filming and things himself. And he came in and he said, you know, would you like me to do a promotional video? And he did a little one. And then we said, okay, well, if we were to do camping, four-wheel driving, driver awareness course, you know, we got a quote to do a large video. I think at the time I was able to get a grant to have it done. And he produced this, what I think is really quite a really good short videos. I'm a member of the local Bay Desert Chamber of Commerce, and last year they decided that they'd have a business showcase your business at each month. And so I volunteered, I think it was the October one. And so I just got up and I said, look, it's easier to show you the video. And I just put this video on that ran for a few minutes. And the comments I got from businesses that I've known since being a member of them back in 2012 had no idea what we do here on this property. So, you know, that was really a really good thing. And but the biggest problem is with a lot of the assistance. See, we've gone through Cyclone Debbie, site fires, drought, flooding.
COVID.
Yeah, COVID. Although COVID was brilliant for us. Once Palaszczuk said, after the 12-week shutdown, and Palaszczuk said people can go out, but only within 50 kilometres of their property.
Mm.
We were found because people, we just skimmed on the edges of Brisbane and the Gold Coast, and we had the best 2 years through COVID than we had for the previous 8 years.
Yep.
So for us, it was really great. And a lot of those clients that did find us, they've been back two or three times a year. Which,
returning traffic is what you want.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant, really. When you look at, you know, there's probably eight other four-wheel drive parks within a 3-hour drive of Brisbane and the Gold Coast. Plus you've got the beaches, or, you know, Fraser and Horton and things, and then, of course, you've got the national parks. But, yeah, we always said if we get someone come back twice a year, they're local, you know, they're regular. Because unlike Sydney, when we were in Sydney, we had a 3.5 in the 90s. We saw all the national parks, all the four-wheel drive places in the Greater Sydney Basin closed down. We had a 3.5 to 4 hour drive before you could even go into four-wheel driving. And that was one reason why we've persisted with this property. And things like the video are educating council and people in government places to realise that four-wheel drivers are not just all bash and crash.
No, not at all.
And things that offer. And, you know, when you think in the 10 years or what are we up to now, 13 years that Scenic Room has been operating, there is no legal four-wheel, really, apart from the dirt road, proper four-wheel driving, tracks, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Redlands, and Logan City, and Ipswich are losing a lot of their tracks as well. So that was one reason why we also persisted, is because coming from Sydney and actually seeing that, I mean, I see comments and people say, oh, it's a national park, I'll never close a national park. It's like, hello, they will.
Yeah, they will.
And when things get overused and not looked after, unfortunately, sometimes there are four-wheel drivers that are going to spoil it.
And those minorities do spoil it for people.
Yeah, they do. But as I say, because of our long history with the camping and the four-wheel driving, you know, that was part of our motivation to keep pushing forward. And, you know, we know we've got – there is just so much I can do with this property, with the environment side of it, with wildlife and things. But, you know, when you're limited to a daily number of clients with the tight restrictions we've got, that is on the back burner. The main thing is that we want to give people a nice camping ground. I mean, to give people an idea, to open up those campsites on the 13 area, it literally took us 4 years to get rid of the weeds, get rid of the lantana, level the ground, grow the grass, control the secondary weeds, deal with flood, drought, bushfires. So I get very precious about my campsites.
Understandable. Well, that's fantastic. So, look, I've enjoyed the chat. I think it's great to see where you two couple have come from. You've certainly got a great background, and obviously good to see Brian on the mend and back behind the wheel of a four-wheel drive before you know it, steering up the hill and cleaning the toilets out instead of Wendy having to do it every day. So.
When he was going through therapy, the occupation therapist came in to the boys. There was four in the ward, and she said, "Oh, boys, in the morning we're going to the kitchen, so we'll see you in the kitchen, not the therapy room." And Brian says, "What for?" And he said, "She said, oh, well, we're going to teach you how to prepare and cook your food." And he said, "Don't bother." He said, "I never did it before the stroke, and I've got no intention of doing it after." And he just didn't go.
For those that are listening, and it could be your first time, what's the easiest way for people to get in touch, Wendy? Is it the website's the best thing, or
just Facebook? Email?
Email.
Email is the best. If people call me, I usually give them my email to contact me.
Yep. And what's the email?
The email is.
I'll put it in the notes as well down below. So if you do want to, you can click on that and you can certainly get Wendy that way. So what's your email?
Wendy@scenicrimadventurepark.com.au. It's on our Facebook page and our website. Also, I think on the website is contact@scenicrimadventurepark.com.au. That also comes to me, and both of the phone numbers, because everything is done online. Because we have the tight restrictions of use, you usually have to juggle. Majority of times it's not an issue, but we've also got things like when a club comes to book in, or Motorama decide to come in with 25 cars, it sort of takes that block for that day. So that's why we ask people. But, you know, generally, unless we've got a club coming in, we can fit most people in.
Yeah,
but that will change over time.
Good.
But, no, it'd be great to see new people. And as I say, not. We do have some photographs of some of the campsites with caravans in, but even the motorhomes. We've had a couple of the really big trucks.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Which are the converted trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those guys come in. But you have to be prepared. There's 6.36 kilometres off the highway to get to us, and probably 4 of those kilometres are dirt.
Yeah.
And we've got 7 creek crossings to
go. Yeah, but it's comfortable dirt. It's nothing that's, there's nothing that's crazy there. So.
No, and also a good thing too is, especially this past year with the rain, is I post up each morning on our Facebook page if we have had rain, because we've got beautiful black soil here.
Yeah, tracks get slippery.
Very slippery with the rain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do give people head ups. But if people have already paid to come in and the weather is an issue, we help credits for people. So, and we don't have a time limit on that credit.
Yeah, well done. All right. So, listeners, that's it's been a great chat with Wendy and Brian. And like I said, if you're looking for that little weekend getaway or simply just a nice drive in the bush for a day, you can come and do day tours here. They have day passes. Yeah, hook them up, the Scenic Rim Adventure Park, and come on out to this, what I think is probably one of the best little hidden secrets in southeast Queensland. So thanks, Wendy, and thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Great.